Welcome to an encore episode of Words and Pictures, the show about the narrative arts. I'm S.W. Conser. Spain Rodriguez was one of the most prolific and visionary members of the underground cartoonist movement in the 1960s and 70s. He covered the 1968 Democratic National Convention for the newspaper The East Village Other. He ran with the Road Vultures Motorcycle Club, and he created celebrated comic book characters, including the urban superhero Trash Man. Spain visited the KABU studios in February of 2009 to talk with Bill Dodge about his graphic biography of Che Guevara, a book which Art Spiegelman described as brilliant and radical. At the time of this conversation, Spain was battling cancer, and he died in November of 2012 at the age of 72. While you're enjoying this vintage interview, we would like to encourage you to take a moment, go online, and support community radio at kboo.fm. And now, Spain Rodriguez, in conversation with Bill Dodge, February 2009.
So here we were, you know, a couple of hippies in the Bronx trying to mooch 35 cents from people, and people did not want to hear it, man. What's the matter with you, bub? Get lost. Underground comics, well, we like to think of ourselves as, you know, significant, but, you know, we're kind of an exclusive club. There's good reason to attempt to try to reduce Che Guevara to just another pretty face, but I think that their attempts are futile.
It's KBOO's Words and Pictures. This is Bill Dodge, and today's guest is Spain Rodriguez. Welcome, Spain.
Thank you.
And this is a fantastic work that you put together. I'm glad that you put pen to paper to do it. And this is a graphic biography, Che by Spain Rodriguez.
A lot of people don't know where Che was from or also what Che means. It just means kid, right?
There's two stories in his diaries. I mean, the thing about Ernesto is he just kept diaries right until his last moments. And the interesting thing about Ernesto Che Guevara is Ernesto Guevara was born prematurely on June 14th, 1928, in the Argentine city of Rosario. For centuries, the Hispanic world had provided refuge to Irish fleeing persecution, and Guevara's mother and father both had Irish ancestry. Yeah, he grew up in a middle-class household, the first of five children. His parents supported the Spanish Republic's lost struggle against the fascist insurgency. But as the family's financial misfortunes dimmed, the political arguments grew more heated. Che's mother is rumored to have brandished a pistol during a fiery political debate. So those are the beginnings of Che Guevara. So,
go ahead and move on if you want to read something else from your book about Che.
Okay. It's interesting. The first part, the part that people are most familiar with, are the motorcycle diaries. And, of course, the movie gets into those better than I can. But one thing I have here is that they couldn't stage in the movies. I mean, but basically what happened was Ernesto's girlfriend, Chechina, rejected his proposals. I mean, he was just, even at that time, he was just kind of a wild guy, you know, but, mm-hmm. And she came from, rather aristocratic family. And so his friend who had a motorcycle, actually a one-cylinder matchless, this called La Poderosa, the powerful one, decided to travel through Latin America. And this trip is an interesting counterpoint to Kerouac's On the Road, because it's an interesting Latin American version with a certain political sensibility that Kerouac actually had before he'd become a beatnik. But by the time he'd become a beatnik, he kind of lost it, but Ernesto didn't. Or Ernesto actually was beginning to get a deeper political understanding of things. I mean, he was really well read. He his family were well educated. So, but he had kind of a liberal point of view. But as he traveled through Latin America, he kind of began to see things more clearly. But anyway, the thing that I have in this graphic novel is the real end of La Poderosa happened when they were caught in a cattle stampede coming up a mountain road. So that was the end, but not the end of their trip. So they moved on through Latin America. There's a guy who's identified in Che's diary as the world traveler, who Che finds at the end of his motorcycle diaries in Venezuela and Caracas. And this guy says, the terrible thing is people need to be educated, and this they cannot do before taking power. They will only learn at the cost of their own mistakes, which will be very serious and will cost many innocent lives, or perhaps not. Maybe those lives will not have been innocent because they will have committed the huge sin against nature, meaning lacking of ability to adapt. You and I, for example, will die cursing the power they helped with great sacrifice to create. Revolution is impersonal. My sin is greater because I am more astute and will die knowing that my sacrifice stems from an inflexibility symbolizing our rotten civilization. I also know you will die with your fist clenched and your jaw tensed, a perfect manifestation of struggle. In other words, this guy predicted Che's death, and it's right there in his diary.
You're listening to an encore episode of Words and Pictures, recorded in February of 2009, and featuring the late underground cartoonist Spain Rodriguez in conversation with Bill Dodge.
You said you did go to art school, correct?
Yes. Well, I was a comic book kid. My mother was a painter. Mm-hmm. So the first comic I saw, which there was a kid upstairs from me, and he had a scrap of a Plastic Man comic, and in it, Plastic Man's partner, Woozy Wonks, had mm-hmm. this helicopter that was an outhouse. And, I knew what an outhouse was. I had to be been 3 or 4, I knew that. But just the idea intrigued me, so I was trying to draw that outhouse, but I just couldn't get it right.
Jack Cole,
yeah, mm-hmm. right. Yeah, what a great imagination. And
we're going to drop as many names as we can during the show. What the heck?
Well, all these guys, I mean, the whole thing about the history of comics is, it's just been, the history of cartoons, which is interesting in and of itself. All these things came together. The English invented the voice balloon. And
political comics.
And political comics, right. There were these guys, Gilray and Crookshank and Rawlinson, who did exquisite porn. Mm-hmm. I mean, they all did porn, but Rawlinson was the guy who was exquisite. And then the French started – well, there was a Swiss guy who I can't think of his name now, but he actually did the first comics. And in those days, comics were done by lithograph. So if you had to do another edition, you just had to redraw the comic. But the Swiss guy actually had comics and had words and everything. I mean, but a lot of guys like William Blake and Goya had experimented doing words and pictures. I mean, it was always a thing that that it always seemed a natural thing to do. You got words, and people can talk, people can write. If you can draw, well, it's just an added advantage. So once all the stuff started to gel in the late 1800s, and the formality of having voice balloons and telling a story, and you had guys like Winsor McCay, one of the great draftsmen of all times,
right? Little Nemo in Slumberland and Dreams of the Rarebit Fiend.
Yes, that are still able to enchant us today. But you know, you have then comic books, the history of comic books itself, and Superman, and
It's a broad subject to talk about, isn't it?
Yes. So you know, here we are. We're underground comics are a little, we like to think of ourselves as, having significant, but, we're kind of an exclusive club.
Yeah.
The thing is, when they have suppressed EC Comics, they instilled the Comics Code, which is really one of the most oppressive documents in world history. You know, something like the list of the Inquisition, all the things that you were supposed to watch for secret Jews, whether they, wash their clothes on Thursday or something, and stuff like that.
Once I sat down and read all the things you are and are not supposed to do in the Comics Code and realized, once I really read it and got a look at it, I'm thinking, oh, now I understand the San Francisco comics heyday even more, because you guys are saying, you say we can't do this, huh? Well, we'll see about that.
Well, anybody who says, anybody who says you can't say that,
yeah,
is fair game, so, and this is, this is what we do.
I think you did mention there shouldn't be a limit to expression. If it's something that it's personally important to you, then you should draw and write about it no matter what.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what the First Amendment says,
Yeah.
That's what, this is the foundation of America. This is one of the pillars of American culture, that we can speak our mind.
If I'm telling somebody about the 1950s, is they tried to go after the motion picture industry and they jailed a few people, then they tried to go after the army, that didn't work. So what was left? Comics. And that sort of worked, but at least MAD survived by just making itself a larger format. See, it's not a comic book now.
Yes.
It's a magazine.
That's right.
Which I thought was really brilliant.
Yeah, well, the whole story about William Gaines, William Gaines, whose father, Max Gaines, was a very conservative guy. The stories from the Bible and history stories.
It's sort of like a Citizen Kane story, because Max dies and then the younger Bill takes over. What am I going to do now?
Yeah, right. He wanted to be a science teacher.
Did he?
Yeah. So, he finds himself in, with this comic book company in the late 90s, Love Comics was a big thing. That was started by Jack Kirby.
You meant the late 50s, right?
Late 50s, yeah. Love Comics was had become big, and Crime Comics were big. So it's interesting to see those comics. They had a science fiction comic called Moon Girl that was slowly changed. There was something about the postal laws to, if you sent things through the mail, you couldn't just come up with a new title. So that's why early EC Comics, early Tales from the Crypt, started 15 and stuff. But they had this comic called Moon Girl, and at a certain point they changed it to a moon and a girl and a spooning or something like that, But to see how the stuff evolved, and Gaines and Feldstein, another great artist,
right?
Who doesn't get enough credit?
No, he's still around.
He's still around, yeah. Doing Western paintings.
Did you meet up with most of these guys over a period of time?
I got to know Wood pretty good. Wood, who was actually one time I said to Kurtzman, I said, well, did you know that you were hiring a commie? And he said, he corrected me. Harvey Kurtzman, whose work first appeared in the Daily Worker when he was a kid, he corrected me. He says, no, Wood was not a communist. He was a radical. So
he's probably the most imitated artist that I know of, and that speaks a lot for his talent.
Well, I have to say that I like guys who imitate Wood better than guys who come up with original style.
Rand Holmes is a good example of somebody that was
great
in that
example.
School. Yeah.
No, I mean, Rand Holmes was more like Wood than Wood himself, So.
I wonder if they ever met up.
I wonder.
I know that Wally had kind of a troubled life towards the end of his life and was kind of isolated, as far as I know. But that's, I know that's kind of beside the point, but well, his influence is just huge, though, still. Even if people don't know his name, they know the style.
Well, it's funny. I was in Spain at an event called the Semana Negra, the Black Week. It's in the city called Gijón in the north of Spain. And I was there with Phoebe Gluckner, another name that should be dropped.
Yeah.
Well, she has done. She's done these great biographical comics about her her early life, being on the streets in San Francisco, and you know, she's a good artist and a beautiful woman. And so I asked her. I said, well, you know, I mentioned Wallace Wood. She said, who? She had never heard of Wallace Wood. I said, what? You've never heard of Wallace Wood? How can this be? You know. So I bugged her about that for a long time. So she. At a certain point, she said, well, there is no Wallace Wood. This is just something you made up to make me feel bad. I said, okay. I mean, there she was with her computer. I said, okay, look up Wallace Wood. And so she looked up Wallace Wood, and she said, what? What do you mean? That's you. And this is Hal Robbins. This is Paul Mavridis. And
it's amazing how one person can really start something rolling.
Yeah, you know? Well, he was the master of the cast shadow, you know.
Oh, yeah, and the reflections on any kind of shiny object, including eyes.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd have like four or five reflections in one eyeball
yeah.
from different directions.
Well, it's funny, there's portraits by Albrecht Dürer who... Albrecht Dürer is an interesting guy because...
Woodcut guy from the, 1600s?
From the 1500s, yeah, yes. And 1400s. But, you know, he has these portraits and he has these... You look in the eyeballs and there's like a little window, you know, like they have in cartoons, you know. So, I mean, yeah, that's an interesting evolution. Going back to the history of all this stuff, you know, in the early days, art, he had to have a lot of money to support artists and to support painters, and the guys who had this were the church mostly, and so it was really in Holland where they had in the 17th century where there was enough money around so that they could paint ordinary things. And then in England, a painter named Hogarth said he was tired of painting weeping virgins and Christ coming down from the cross. He wanted to paint the city streets, and he did a bunch of etchings, showed the streets of early 18th century England. So,
and I think the title of one of his series of prints was The Rake's Progress.
The Rake's Progress, yeah. Right. You know, so
Which was considered scandalous because it wasn't about really nice things.
Yes.
So those guys were kind of inventing underground cartoons.
Yes, they were. And the whole thing, you know, the whole idea is to have some kind of visual image in your home. Mm-hmm. And Dürer, you know, the Dürer's places, they started doing these woodcuts and all this was an early cheap printing process where the average person could have an image,
right,
in their home.
You're listening to an encore episode of Words and Pictures, recorded in February of 2009, and featuring the late underground cartoonist Spain Rodriguez in conversation with Bill Dodge.
The time that you met up with your fellow Zap artists, I was thinking about how to describe this to people. I like to call that time in San Francisco and the changes that were happening in the United States and worldwide as an awakening. I know that Crumb started Zap, and then you guys came on board gradually. So let's start with R. Crumb since he started Zap.
Well, I think we have to go back to our real forefathers, and especially the Harvey Kurtzman.
There you go.
The guy who started MAD and EC Comics. That whole story, it's a fascinating story, and we can't go into it now. But
but it is worth repeating the influence of MAD on what you guys are doing. And
well, you know, Crumb always complained to me. I never went to art school. He never went to art school, but he got to hang out with Harvey Kurtzman, who published both him and Gilbert Shelton in his magazine Help.
And Terry Gilliam.
Uh-huh, yeah, right.
Yeah.
So, you know, Harvey Kurtzman was a great artist and a real good guy, and he was the editor of Frontline Combat and Two-Fisted Tales, one of the pioneers of historical comics. You know, this is certainly
right.
Whetted my interest in history. And I'm proud to say that I am an EC artist. When they tried to revive Two-Fisted Tales, I did something in the first issue. And
I remember that.
Well, it was the only thing that wasn't panned by the comics journals. I'm grateful for that, you know, so I hope I did Harvey right. But so you know, Crumb, there was, I think it was Mad 16, where periodically as comics had started, there were always people who were concerned that it had a corrupting influence on youth. But in the 40s, you know, everybody read comics. But
right, 10 cents a pop.
Yeah, right. You know, there wasn't television. So when they started cracking down and when they actually suppressed EC Comics, that, I mean, this had a big personal effect on me because I'd always had a certainly idealistic idea that in America there was free speech. But, you know, this didn't prove to be true. But on the cover of Mad 16, they showed all these underground cartoonists being led away to the hoosegow, you know, to led away to the paddy wagon. And, you know, shortly after that, they suppressed the EC Comics. And but this is an idea. I mean, as a kid, I knew I couldn't be the only – there had to be a lot of good artists, good kid artists around the country, you know. And, you know, this would happen again, you know. So in the mid-60s, there's all this stuff happening, you know, the political turmoil and – Bob Dylan and you know the Beatniks and there was all the stuff going on. You just knew, you know, that there was the time. You know, there was the time for this to start happening. And
seems like it almost had to happen.
It had to happen. You know, I in the summer of 65, I lived on the Lower East Side, and Ed Sanders had a magazine called You, a magazine of the arts. So I had, you know, I tried to get something published in that, but he just kind of waved me, you know, get lost, kid. So I ended up going back to Buffalo, and periodically I'd go back to New York, and I got in touch with Walter Bowert, who was starting, I think it might have been the first underground newspaper, the East Village Other, Evo. And unfortunately, Walter passed away earlier this year, and we all miss him. But you know, when I came back to the Lower East Side, my stature had grown in Ed's eyes. So I got to hang out with the Fugs and Ken Weaver, who's still a good buddy of mine, and I haven't talked to Ed for a while. But
is that how your stature grew?
I certainly did a bunch of stuff, but I mean, you know, it was mostly getting publishing stuff in the East Village Other, including my first strip, Trash Man, Agent of the Sixth International, the first one that I thought up.
Right, we can't leave him out.
We can't leave him out. So
how did that come about? I mean, other than was this the product of the times, the way I look at it? But maybe you can explain how that gelled in your mind to do Trash Man.
Well, he. This was in the 60s, the late 60s, so things were just starting to happen. There was all this ferment, and Trash Man and the Sixth International lived in this chaotic world of the future, and he was an agent of the Sixth International, which... the thing that distinguished the Sixth International was the parasciences, and Trash Man could get messages from cracks in the sidewalk and electrical fixtures that would warn him of impending danger. So Trash Man lived in this milieu, and I did a whole bunch of I did many pages in East Village Other, and I did. Three issues of Subvert Comics, and there's also a collected work of a Trash Man that was put out by Gary Groth at Fantagraphic. So that was
so East Village Other is before Zap.
Yes,
correct?
Well, it was before Zap, but Zap, Crumb. Well, you know, there were a bunch of underground cartoonists before me. Captain High, Trina Robbins had a strip called Trina Robbins and Hurricane Nancy Panzeca had a strip called A Gentle's Trip Out.
And God Knows was pretty
God
early
Knows
on.
God Knows was produced by Jack Jackson.
Right.
Hadn't been in contact with those Texas guys at that time. I mean, I knew Gilbert, but I didn't realize there was a whole movement in Texas behind him. But the first guy I met in New York was Art Spiegelman, and the first cartoonist, and he had all these wild ideas about fooling around with the page structure and doing all kinds of different panels. I something that never occurred to me, you know. So Art, you know, I mean, that's Art. Anybody who knows Art, as Art is always thinking. Art is always coming up with controversial ideas, and you can agree with them or not, but you know, you always have to think about what Art says. I go to Art's talks whenever he comes to town, and you know, he's always coming up with something, and for months I'm having conversations in my head with Art, you know, and I can't wait till I see him again so I can say, well, how about this and how about that, you know, whatever you know, wild idea he's come up with in the meantime. But you know, he's always real knowledgeable about things. A good story is living on the Lower East Side, one of the things that started to happen was begging. So, you know, people would always ask you for spare change. And at the time I thought, well, you know, I could see that. You know, some people have a lot of money. Sure, why not, you know, give somebody something. But I could never get into it myself. You know, I always kind of like managed to get by without having to ask for spare change. Except me and Kim Deitch, my roommate at the time, we would go down and see Art Spiegelman, who was working at Topps Bubblegum, which is, I think it was on 35th Street in Brooklyn. And so we'd get on the subway, go down to 35th Street, mm-hmm. and, you know, go see what was going on at Topps. This one time, me and Kim, we got on a subway going to 35th Street and got off of it and didn't look familiar. And at a certain point, we realized we were in 35th Street in the Bronx. This is 1967. Hmm. And, you know, we're here we are, a couple of hippies. It's starting to rain. You know, a certain point, we asked somebody, and the guy says, no, I know there's a Topps Bubblegum in Brooklyn, but there's no Topps Bubblegum here in the Bronx. So as it turned out, you know, Kim, the hippie deadbeat that he was going to mooch a quarter off Art to get back. Myself, being the gentleman artist with a temporary cash flow problem, I was just going to mooch a dime off of him. So here we were, you know, a couple of hippies in the Bronx trying to mooch 35 cents from people, and people did not want to hear it, man. What's the matter with you, bub? Get lost. And finally, some generous young woman gave us 35 cents, and we straggled back to Manhattan. And words and pictures.
Spain Rodriguez. Anything else we haven't talked about?
Oh, I'm sure there's a lot of stuff we haven't talked about.
We'll have to continue the conversation. Anyway, thanks a lot, Spain.
Well, thank you.
You've been listening to an encore episode of Words and Pictures, recorded in February of 2009, and featuring the celebrated underground cartoonist Spain Rodriguez, who died in November of 2012. I'm S.W. Conser, joined by Bill Dodge. Thanks to all our listeners on the radio dial and on the web. You can find an archived version of this show later today at kboo.fm/wordsandpictures. And be sure to follow us on Twitter, at Words and Picture. Before we go, I'd like to remind you that your community radio needs your support more than ever. To become a member of KBOO or to arrange for a donation of any size, please visit kboo.fm.